Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday, May 27th. Before we begin our work, would you please take a roll call for members?
Representative Levy.
Levy present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is present by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by video, but I have my camera off for a few more minutes until I finish my lunch.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. And for anyone who heard that comment from Representative Smith, I want to assure you that this isn't a matter of just sort of choosing to eat at leisure. Rep. Smith stays on the House floor till the bitter end, and we all just a short while ago concluded our session in the House chamber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank
you. We have several items on our agenda today, is several things to get through, and I will appreciate the committee's and the staff and viewer patience as we proceed, sometimes with a little bit of a slower or deliberate pace as we assure that we have paperwork ready or we have motions ready as members want to make motions to accomplish certain things. Regarding moving a bill or making an amendment. So there may be a point at which we stand at ease while we get something ready, but we think we've got it all covered pretty well. We're not going to take things in the same order they were printed because of some paperwork and process questions. House Bill 2819, we're going to do in a little while. The next bill on the printed agenda, House Bill 3295, that will be carried over to the next meeting. Again, House Bill 3295, carry over to the next meeting. The next bill is House Bill 3373. I'm opening a work session now on House Bill 3373.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, House Bill 3373 establishes the Office of Taxpayer Advocate in the Department of Revenue. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. The -2 amendment subjects the taxpayer advocate to all confidentiality and disclosure policies that the Department of Revenue also faces, and it provides the taxpayer advocate authority to issue orders in cases where taxpayers are facing significant hardship due to the Department of Revenue not following applicable administrative rules or guidance. There is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal light in OLS.
Thank you. Committee members, do you have any questions? We did have, our last work session, was that April 22nd? There was one back then. Any questions for Ms. Harger on House Bill 3373?
Madam Chair, this is Rep. Smith.
Yeah, Representative Smith first and then Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really believe there's some merit in what we're discussing here today. I'm curious because I don't have it in front of me. I'm struggling a little bit. On the fiscal light, do we have an indication of what that cost is going to be? And again, the only reason I ask is because I anticipate this will come to the general government sub, so I just want to start preparing for it.
Chair Nathanson and Representative Smith, I'm looking at the fiscal now and I don't see a cost estimate, but I believe, I don't see a cost estimate for this bill as part of the fiscal aid.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure, but maybe someone could remind us. We did have testimony from Department of Revenue, Ms. Einhold, about the number of staff they thought would be included. My recollection is three. Does that match anyone else's? I'm seeing head nods. If that helps, Rep. Smith.
It's perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Harger, so the dash two, again, is, I think we talked about it, was three FTEs to get the office started. And the difference between it and the dash one or the original bill was that it was not going to include the grant program. I just wanted to make sure that that is clear on the dash two does not include the grant program. And then I'll have a comment afterwards.
Yes, I believe that's correct, and that's consistent with the testimony we heard on Tuesday.
Okay, a quick comment then, Madam Chair.
Sure.
So I'm going to support this. I think this is a great idea, and my thought has always been, let's start small, let's see how it goes, and then we can decide how we build out from there, rather than building this big machine and not knowing how we need to move this way or that. So I'm supportive of the dash two and will be the amended bill.
Thank you. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I also want to express my support for this bill. I do want to express some disappointment that about the grant program. I understand that we want to be able to expand access to this to these services, and I know that many community-based organizations are able to just have the, whether it's language capacity or the just community connections and trust built to actually, you know, we heard from NAYA and all these other groups that are able to do tech services. So I look forward to hopefully expanding that program or, I'm disappointed that we couldn't include it in this bill, but I still am strongly supportive of this bill.
Thank you, Rep. Pham. Any other discussion or questions? Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Rep. Pham, I share your interest in that program, but I would love, as we go back to look at that, to see an even broader vision of the kind of services that we can provide to people. We talk a lot about financial literacy, and I know the Treasurer is undergoing an effort where they pull together a working group to look at those issues across the state. I think the services that we might want to fund go much more broad, are much broader than just tax preparation. It's really all the decision making that a family has to undertake in order to put together a budget, figure out how to manage that budget, and then make sure that they're aware of the variety of programs that are out there. Because as we've remarked many times in this committee, there are programs that can be terrific for people, like IDAs, like college savings, like the Oregon Savings Retirement Program. And we have to make sure that people really understand them and know how to access them and put them together. So I say, let's come back to it, but let's dream a little bigger.
I too am interested in all of the points made by Representative Marsh. I'm interested in expanding access to the earned income tax credit. And one way to expand access to that is to expand the number of people filing tax returns and helping them become more aware. So there's much to discuss and look forward to. Continued discussions later this year and next year. Any other comments? Otherwise, we might be ready for a motion. Representative Valderrama.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to reiterate some of the comments from some of my colleagues. I also am disappointed that we aren't able to provide the additional resources, I think, on the this particular version of the bill. I do think that the expansion is particularly important for communities of color, and that is, I think, what we've heard a lot from the testimony as well. So I just wanted to lift that up.
Thank you for your comments. I'm not seeing any other hands.
Are you ready for a motion then?
I am.
Chair Nathanson, I move the -2 amendment to House Bill 3373.
Vice Chair Reschke moves the -2 amendment to House Bill 3373. Discussion on this motion to pick up the -2 amendment. I'm not seeing any. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes no.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move the move House Bill 3373 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 3373 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I'm curious to see how this program works and evolves, and how it's used by different people in Oregon, but also different organizations in Oregon. Is it used more by, say, CPA firms or nonprofits or individuals? I'm real curious how this plays out, and so looking forward to revisiting this in the next legislative session.
Thank you. Additional comments? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to echo the comments of Representative Reschke. I think there's a lot of wisdom in having us take a look back here in the future to see how this is working, what is its level of effectiveness, and you know, are there things we can do to assist the department in becoming even more effective in serving citizens? And so with a person who wears a dual hat, I can share with you, we'll be watching this in the Ways and Means General Government sub as well. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Valderrama.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to reiterate that I'm really glad to see this bill concept. I think a lot of folks would benefit from the additional opportunity to have someone support them, maybe someone from the community to provide culturally appropriate information as well. I think it's really important. There's lots of barriers to filing taxes, and you know, as we all know, sometimes it can be a little bit of a confusing process. Excuse me. So I'm really excited that we were able to get to this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional comments? Roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. That completes our work on this bill. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3373. Opening a work session on House Bill 2357A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, This is Jamie McGovern. I apologize for not being on video today. I'm just having some tech issues. House Bill 2357A does a few things. It reallocates the privilege tax revenue to the Oregon Forest Resources Institute to two new subaccounts and the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. The two new subaccounts are the Family Forest Land subaccount and the Sound Forestry Practices subaccount. Those sit within the State Forestry Department account. And expands the board of directors to include two new members, and one related to fishery or wildlife related science, and another who represents the environmental community. We have a A7, which specifies that those two new voting members are appointed by the Senate President and the Speaker of the House. The revenue impact statement that you'll see online shows that there's no total change to the revenues collected because there's not a reduction or an increase in the rate specifically, which will be set by the board. So assuming that the rate is continually set by the board as it's newly designated, this now just changes the allocation of those funds. And so you'll see a decrease to the Oregon Forest Resources Institute in the next few biennium, and then an increase to the Sound Forest Practices and Family Forest Land subaccount, which are newly created, and the net is zero.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? And if no questions, discussion. Discussion on House Bill 2357A. Representative Levy, then Reschke.
Are we discussing dash six at all?
I'm
sorry for the background noise.
I think if you want to talk about it, you can.
Or are we only discussing the dash seven?
I'm expecting a motion to adopt the dash seven, but this is a committee meeting where you can discuss any of the information we've already got available to us.
Oh, okay, thank you. So as a producer, okay, I would like to say that the dash seven is offensive to producers because it removes the OFRI, also removes the producer's opportunity to have a conversation and be part of the board. And we're not big forest producers, but we are small forest producers. And as a small forest producer, we used OFRI on a regular basis. And we found them to be very good to us and very educational for us. And it's disappointing to me that there wasn't more input from or more listening to the small producers who really used the work and the efforts that OFRI put out to help us.
Thank you. I think Rep. Reschke was next, and that will be followed by Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just going to just signal that I'm going to be a no on the dash A7, and then I'll have some comments when we're considering the amended bill, moving the amended bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pham, I think I saw your hand next.
Thank you, Rev. Nathanson. I just wanted to express my support for the dash A7 amendment. I think it's important that we do that the amount of money is still the same, and that it is, after feedback from small landlot owners about needing to preserve the important small landlot owner education program, I'm glad that it's still, these activities that support their work is still preserved. And yeah, I'm just glad that we were able to that I can see that in the amendment, and I'm strongly in support.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a courtesy for vote counting, I will be a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Valderrama.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to voice my, as well, my strong support for the Dash 7. I do think that it provides the additional accountability that we would like to see, and echo Representative Pham's comments as well.
Thank you. I don't see another hand right now. I'm ready for a motion.
Excuse me one second, just making sure I can pull up the right. Chair Nathanson, I move the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 2357A.
Vice Chair Pham moves the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 2357A. Discussion on this motion, which is to move the Dash 7 amendment. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes no.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes nay.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. That motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2357 with the Dash A7 amendment to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2357A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From the position of the minority party, I really wish this would have had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means to allow us to look at the budgetary aspects of what's about to occur. I know that's not going to occur, and I can respect that decision, but I'm of the opinion we should have done that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a few things to say in the comments, I guess, and I'll just start off with, I think that that we're overreacting. So may there have been some indiscretions with OFRI, the Secretary of Audit, Secretary of State's audit, I think is gonna turn that up, whether that is. And I'm afraid we're taking kind of a drastic step here and we can't walk it back until the next session. And reducing the budget by 2/3 is it pretty much eliminates a lot of what OFRI does today. Some of the claims of indiscretions or problems or ethics violations or whatever is being claimed was actually before the current executive director was in place. So do we need to tighten things up? Do we need to take a look at it? Yeah, again, I think we do. But I think we also need to use the Secretary of State's audit as a guide. So just kind of in closing, my thoughts are that this is an overreaction, a drastic move, and we could have taken prudent steps and just waited until we had the Secretary of State's audit and then known what the indiscretions were and make the proper corrections. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Reschke, for your remarks. Representative Smith, I just saw the hand go down. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to express my support. I think that I do feel comfortable based on the extensive work and the reporting on this bill. I do feel comfortable moving forward on making some changes, and I'm glad that we're keeping the overall amount of money and keeping the important landline education programs, the other education programs that DOFRI has done, but shifting it to ODF, I think can actually lend some expertise and some of the specificity that small landline owners receive. So I'm happy that the same amount is still available for these important activities.
Thank you. I'll wait just a few more seconds to see if there are any other hands up. Let's have a roll call vote now.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes no.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes nay.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. The motion passes. And we're assigning a carrier for this one, is that correct? That would be Representative Salinas. Is there any other? Yes.
Madam Chair, is there any way I could get a co-carrier? I'm teasing. I'm sorry, I'm teasing.
Have you had your dessert yet, Representative Smith?
No, I will. I will. Sorry.
Any other business before I close the work session on 2357A? Okay, I'm closing the work session on 2357A. And let's see, our next bill would be 3160. Committee, we're going to stand at ease. There may be a process issue, and then we're going to eventually get back to another bill that we were waiting for process. So please stop the recording. We'll be at ease for a minute or two.
Resumed.
Thank you. We're back in business. Opening the work session on House Bill 3160, LRO.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, House Bill 3160 has the -4 amendment in OLIS that you saw on Tuesday. This measure establishes the Oregon Wildfire Preparedness and Community Protection Fund. The -4 removes the surcharge on insurance premiums from the bill. That was the funding source that you heard about on Tuesday. It provides a $45 million appropriation to the state fire marshal from the general fund for purposes outlined within the bill. There's a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. There's no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal light for that $45 million.
Thank you. Committee, questions for Ms. Harger? Discussion. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I have appreciated the opportunities to have public hearings, and as I noted in the comments on the bill when we last spoke 2 days ago, there's really two important parts to this bill. One is the establishment of the fund, which we believe should be an ongoing conduit to make sure that we are have aligned the agencies that all have a role in wildfire prevention. The second part was how do we fund that fund? Where do the revenues come from? And as you all know, the base bill discusses an insurance fee that would be placed on associated with insurance policies that have a property element to it. I still think that's a really interesting option. Certainly there is a nexus there. If you have property, that property is at risk with the incidence of wildfires as we're seeing them on the Oregon landscape. Having said that, we do recognize that there are a number of questions about the retaliatory nature of insurance and insurance billing, insurance taxes. We've been aware of those. We've been trying to find out a little bit more and see if they're actually relevant or how relevant they are to this bill. But it's really clear that we're not going to be able to get all those questions answered in this session. So Rep. Reschke, bless his heart, thank you, Rep. Reschke, had put forward an amendment, the -4 amendment, which basically establishes the fund, but allocates general fund monies as an initial appropriation to the fund. And we think to get this bill down to Ways and Means to help us have the discussion about how we're going to fund these activities in the future, and to be able to talk about the importance of an umbrella fund that really brings all the agencies and all the work together. We'd love to move the bill with the approval of this committee with the Rep. Reschke's -4 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Representative Marsh, thank you. I appreciate that because I too believe that this is a very important thing to move forward. And I would be willing to help work on something at a later date on this. I really do. Having been an insurance agent at one time when I was going through my bachelor's degree and master's degree, I just know how hard it can be and how much insurance companies charge all these fees for everything else if we were to add this on there. And so, yeah, I would be willing to work on this with you. Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Chair Nathanson, I move the -4 amendment to House Bill 3160.
Vice Chair Reschke moves the -4 amendment to House Bill 3160. Discussion on this motion about this amendment. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Just one more comment. Again, thanks to Rep. Reschke for foreseeing that we might need this option. But I also wanted to note that we have just received some word from LC that we may need a little tweak here to make sure that the money's allocated actually goes through the fund as intended, just a drafting correction. So we will look forward to making that change in Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. For those of you tracking this, this bill does not go directly to the floor. It goes to Ways and Means, and Representative Marsh has just indicated that this fix can be taken care of when it's in possession of the Ways and Means Committee. Any additional discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Another motion?
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3160 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 3160 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Marsh for bringing this forward. This is something that my district, I know we suffer the smoke from California. We suffer the smoke from the western part of the state, and it just seems to hover over Klamath Falls. So we need to do something. And I'm a big fan of creating this fund. And then I guess it's, you know, we have to fund the fund. And so that will be the business of Ways and Means. But I appreciate her bringing this forward and being able to put the dash four on it and getting it fixed in Ways and Means. And we'll see where it goes from there. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anything else? Any other comments? Roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. This bill is on its way to Ways and Means now. We have finished our work on that bill. So I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3160. We're going to stand at ease for just another minute or so, maybe even less. Could you please stop the recording while we take care of a process issue?
Broadcasting.
Thank you. House Committee on Revenue is back in business. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2819.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. Yeah, House Bill 2018 is a bill relating to a personal income tax credit. In this case, this is the earned income tax credit. And the committee heard about this on just this past Monday. So House Bill 2819, again, is an expansion of the Oregon portion of Oregon's earned income tax credit and making that available to taxpayers that file using an individual taxpayer ID number in lieu of a Social Security number. So again, as of with current law right now, through the federal law for the credit, taxpayers using an SSN can qualify for the EITC, but those using an individual tax ID number or ITIN cannot presently in many cases. So the change in the bill, we do have a dash four amendment, which is an update from the dash three. The only change in the dash four is just there's the final line of the dash four, and that's ensuring that taxpayers that file as a non-resident in Oregon, they file a non-resident tax return, can also claim the Oregon portion of the earned income tax credit. And that's in line with how a taxpayer could with a Social Security number. So an example of a non-resident could be someone who lives in Vancouver and works in, say, Multnomah County. But again, that change in the dash four is just making that in line with an ITIN filer would be the same as someone using a Social Security number. So those are the changes in the bill. We do have the paperwork, the revenue impact statement. You'll see that that's up there in OLIS in line with the discussion on Monday. One thing I would just note on that is you can see the revenue impact. It starts at $5.7 million in 21-23. That's due to when the expansion of the credit takes effect. It takes effect midway through the biennium. You see the full cost of it at just under $12 million in 23-25, and the cost is cut in half in the 25-27 biennium, and that's reflective of the existing loss sunset on the underlying earned income tax credit. So just a note on why the revenue impact looks the way it does. And then, yes, we do have the fiscal impact statement. You will notice that there are costs related to setting up the changes to the earned income tax credit. There are costs borne by Department of Revenue, so you'll see that in 21-23. It's about $400,000 and then about $200,000 expected in 23-25.
So, Mr. Easton, that's just illustrating that there are startup costs separate from continuing costs.
Precisely, Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rushkey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Easton, so when does the EITC sunset? Is that at the end of 2026? Is that what it is? Or is it, when is that sunset date?
Yes, Representative Rushkey, it's through tax year 2025. So it sunsets as of January 1st, 2026. And that's in line with the six-year sunset. This was just extended in the 19 session.
19 to 25. Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to express my support for this bill because it's really at its base about helping working poor Oregonian families and making sure that everyone who works in Oregon and files taxes gets treated the same. Right now, we know I have families who are working and aren't able to make ends meet. And for me, I'm thinking particularly about families with children, because we know about the impacts that living under chronic poverty can have on children, and that we've seen the research show that children whose families have access to EITC have better health outcomes, have better educational outcomes. And I think it's important to expand access to this earned income tax credit so that families can just start to gain some more economic stability for themselves and for their children.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any other hands. I'm ready for a motion.
Yes, Chair Nathanson, I move the -4 amendment to House Bill 2819.
Vice Chair Pham moves the -4 amendment to House Bill 2819. Discussion on this motion about the latest amendment that Mr. Easton explained. Representative Rushkey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll be supporting the motion. I think narrowing the scope and the cost is that fits in within my values, so I appreciate that, and hopefully it will help those it's intended to help. I still have some questions on who exactly it will be helping, other than just the description I-10 filers, but I appreciate the willingness to narrow the scope on this, and will be an eye on the -4.
Thank you. Not seeing any other hands, let's have a roll call vote on this motion.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Rushkey.
Rushkey votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2819 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2819 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Discussion on this motion. Representative Rushkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I previously mentioned, I'm still doing some research trying to figure out exactly who this is going to all affect. I understand foreign nationals that may work in Oregon or foreign students can certainly take advantage of that, but I don't think that's the full population. And so just I'm going to be a no on it right now as I do some more research and we'll see how it turns out when we get to JTACs, but just going to flag a no right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Any other business on House Bill 2819? I think we've completed our work. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2819. Next, we're moving to a work session for discussion purposes only on House Bill 2630. Committee, we had a pretty good discussion of this previously. Since then, some of the parties involved have done work on an amendment, and I'd like to hear about the amendment. LRO, could you please set it up for us?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, you will find both dash one and dash two amendments on our list. Both amendments replace the introduced version and are intended to provide funding stability to school districts impacted by wildfires in 2020. But these two amendments actually identify different funding sources. The intro version actually used state school fund itself to fund these schools. But then these amendments identify different funding sources. I could go into details, but we have people who could provide detailed details for both amendments.
Great. Thank you very much. At this time, I would like to invite those persons who we've asked to be in the room to explain the amendments. Could you turn on your camera and your microphone and identify yourself and
Sure. Madam Chair and committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association here along with my colleague who, and we will both do our best to explain very quickly to you what it is we tried to do as it reflected our concerns as expressed in our initial testimony and ways to fix that. And I will say that we have gone to the chief sponsor and other interested parties with respect to this bill to make sure that they appreciated and are tracking with us on the improvements we tried to make. So the first thing I would point out is that the dash one amendment is the one I'll speak to. The dash two, it has a different purpose based on whether or not an omnibus wildfire bill passes instead. We spoke to one of the co-chairs of Ways and Means, and he asked us to offer the committee both ways to fund it, but our preferred way and the one I'm hearing is likely to be the one that they would direct us to advocate for is in the dash one. So that's the best way to describe what we're doing here because they're otherwise identical. In the dash one amendments, we were very concerned that first of all, we clarify that that virtual school attendees inside the wildfire affected districts would not be counted for the purposes of this extension of 5 years of stability because those students are not physically located in those wildfire districts. And in fact, those virtual schools actually are typically growing and would not then enable the sponsoring school district to qualify as a declining enrollment school district. So we thought that removing that would, making sure that those are removed would be the best way to give guidance on how this is to work. Secondarily, we wanted to make sure that we defined what an impact was to a certain degree and what an eligible school district would be to give some guidance to the State Board of Education as it contemplates rulemaking to clarify this bill if it should pass. And thirdly, we wanted to make sure that the funding source what was created that would be dedicated so that the money did not come out of the school the other school districts around the state to pay for this wildfire relief for the next 5 years, but rather that a different resource that's dedicated be available so that it was additive and not coming out of the tills of other districts. And so in the dash one, that comes out of unearmarked available additional resources in that pot in the Student Success Act that is called the statewide account. It has many grants inside of it, but there are more resources there than those who have been obligated for those grants. So this would establish in section five, it establishes a wildfire stabilization account for the wildfire impacted school districts to use in that 5 year period. So those are the overviews. There is one typo that we found, well, actually we didn't find it, LRO found it, that will need to be corrected in a date. And we are in conversations with the Department of Education who are calculating what they believe to be the overall need. We put in a placeholder number, but that is going to be further refined in the next few, hopefully the next day or so, so that we could have one final amendment that would capture everybody's desires for perfecting this bill. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions or have my colleague Morgan Allen from COSA also weigh in.
Thanks, Lori. Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA, and I appreciate the great explanation from my colleague and appreciated working with her to try to find some consensus on these amendments, and appreciate Representative Drazen and Representative Marsh. We've had a chance to review the issues with them, and they are supportive as well, which is great. I'll just add a couple of quick comments. I think the most important thing for us was that the funding for this bill be new resources, not, as Lori said, coming out of the state school fund payments of other school districts. And it meets some bars for us, which is a 5 year funding floor. And it's important for our members to include both the state school fund payments and the student investment account payments. I did speak to the Sandy M. Canyon School District Superintendent, who they have one of the largest virtual charter schools, and he was very clear that they were not expecting that they would get payment for their virtual charter school students either. So I think these amendments feel like a great place to send it down to Ways and Means. As Lori said, I think we have a couple little minor technical tweaks to present the final amendment to the committee and get it down to Ways and Means. But I think most importantly from our perspective, appreciate all the collaboration and the fact that no funding for any other school programs will be impacted if we do it via the dash one funding mechanism. So thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, both Ms. Wimmer and Mr. Allen, for your explanation. Very good summary of what you've done to address the issues that were raised in a public hearing and for working with the sponsors. Committee members, any questions for Ms. Wimmer or Mr. Allen before we move to our next agenda item? Representative Reschke and then Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I see there's the two amendments up there, the dash one and the dash two, and we're just discussing the dash one right now. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Reschke, we think that that's probably the direction we're getting the signal to go. The other one simply referenced a bill that is also happening, House Bill 3127, which created a wildfire stabilization account for schools, but it's our understanding that that'll probably come out. But we wanted to make sure that both options were available depending on how the legislature wanted to go with that.
Thank you.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to express my appreciation to Morgan and Lori for figuring all this out. You may recall from my past comments in this committee, I have strong and emotional responses to this legislation because I've seen close up the devastation that's really been experienced by our school district and the lingering trauma that we're going to be dealing with for years to come. So I'm very grateful that they pulled this together. I think the funding source that they've identified seems quite appropriate, and I will be grateful for your support on this legislation when we actually get to a vote.
I'm not seeing any other hands. Thank you again for bringing us the amendments, pulling together these solutions. I anticipate this committee will be seeing this bill again within a few days, and we'll look forward. And we'll look forward to a new amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2630. The final item on our agenda today is an informational meeting on the forest products harvest tax. And I'll ask LRO to just explain in maybe 30 or 60 seconds, just reminding us about the information we've already received on the harvest tax. I asked for this meeting so that we could hear very briefly, maybe just three to five minutes from a few of those people who are involved in setting the rate. I'd like to hear about the mechanics of how the rate is set, where those numbers come from. We have guests from Oregon State University and Department of Forestry. We invited Oregon Forest Resources Institute. They will not be with us today. The others, however, Department of Forestry and OSU are. And again, just a very, very brief explanation. And since we don't have a lot of time, I would like to ask the committee to limit your questions or comments to just about how this rate is calculated. Representative Marsh, do you have your hand up for, okay, LRO. Get us started off just to set the stage, please.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, you'll just recall that the forest products harvest tax is a tax that's collected on 1,000 board feet or volume. It's currently at $4.38, and that's a combination of several rates that are stacked together. Manny from our office was kind enough to re-upload the meeting materials from two previous presentations that we gave, one on the forest lands in Oregon and timber taxes, and one on the forest products harvest tax specifically. So those will just be there for your reference as you go through this informational hearing.
Great. Thank you. So information is available online. At this time, Oregon State University, do we have Katie Fast and Tom DeLuca available? If one of you could, one or both could turn on your camera and your microphone if you're available.
Yeah.
And give us just a very brief explanation of how you come up with the number. It seems that as you're getting ready, I'm not seeing your camera on yet, but as you're getting ready, I'll just, I think I'll start out with explaining that this is a process not really well understood by this committee, or probably not by most legislators. Instead of the legislature setting a rate, or in this case, several different rates combined into a stacked rate or a combined rate. Every 2 years, some other offices outside of the legislature work to figure out a rate to give, I suppose, to legislative fiscal office, and then it gets to be part of a, it becomes part of a budget, but the rates are actually, it starts out someplace outside the legislature. So from OSU, could you tell us how you get the numbers that you recommend?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. I'm Tom DeLuca. I'm the Dean of the College of Forestry at Oregon State University. I'm here with Katie Fast, who's our legislative liaison, and I will just really briefly say that before I get into the calculation, just that the harvest tax is really a unique contribution in partnership with the college and the university. And the forest sector is the only industry that has and supports a mandatory tax to directly support education and research. And I'd go into more detail on that, but in the interest of time, we basically have 10 cents per 1,000 board feet harvested that goes to the Forest Education Fund, and 90 cents per 1,000 board feet that goes to the Forest Research Laboratory, which is part of the statewide public service program. To calculate the Forest Research Lab component each biennium, the OSU works with the Legislative Fiscal Office to determine the rate, which will vary from session to session. The following three factors are used in the calculation: the projected harvest volume rates, the general fund allocation to the Forest Research Laboratory, and the remaining balance of the Forest Research Lab budget. And the details, I'll turn it over to Katie to, for any other details on that in terms of the calculation.
I think just due to the time limitations, Representative Nathan, I think we'll just leave it to questions if there's areas that you want us to expand on further.
Well, and you're right. I just wanted the briefest explanation of where you get the numbers from. So to get a rate, you have basically two numbers and you divide them and then you come up, not you, but, and then a rate is derived. So where do you get those two numbers from?
Yeah, so just for the record, Katie Fast with OSU Government Relations. So there's actually three numbers that we use in the calculation. The first being the projected harvest rates, which come from Department of Forestry on their projections. The second being the general fund allocation for the Forest Research Lab. That's a line item in the Higher Education Coordinating Commission's budget. And so that takes into account what the match would be from the harvest tax to those general fund dollars. And then the third is what the ending fund balance at the College of Forestry is for that Forest Research Lab. And so those three numbers are really what drives the rate for the Forest Research Lab's portion. And then the education fund, the Forest Education Fund, that's a set rate of 10 cents that stays consistent. But the Forest Research Lab is really the component that will change from session to session.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. DeLuca and Ms. Fast, thank you for being here. Can you tell me what happens when the projected harvest volume decreases dramatically, or let's say it increases dramatically? What's that do to the rate?
Representative Reschke, the rate would then vary. I think there's two options that can happen in that scenario. One, we could see a variance of the rate either up or down, depending on the scenarios. The other is, there's a dependent maybe counter item on the Forest Research Labs budget and what that number is coming from the legislature as well. So we may see also the revenue coming to the college vary from year to year or session to session due to those variables. Or there could also be a general fund allocation to come in and balance it. But I think the first two are the more more likely scenarios.
Thank you.
And could you two stay in the room with us? We're meeting for only probably another 12, 15 minutes at max, and we need to leave time to hear from someone else. But could you stay in the room just in case there's another question?
We are happy to.
Yes,
Thank you very much. We have someone with us from Department of Forestry, Kyle Abraham and or Doug Graff. Could you tell us how you determine where you get the numbers from?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Nathanson. This is Kyle Abraham. For the record, I serve as Private Forest Division Chief for the Oregon Department of Forestry. And I think Doug is here too. So the rate is a combination of factors that we use. The first one is the projected harvest volume for the next biennium. OSU and OFRI also use the same projection of harvest volume. And there's a number of things that go into estimating what that volume looks like over the next biennium. We have an economist that works closely with those two groups to understand what that will be. And then for us, we also submit a bill which is in revenue now, House Bill 2070, which has some blanks in it. And that gets married up with the budget for the department, which is Senate Bill 5518. And that's a combination of knowing what our ending balance is for this biennium, the projected volume harvest for next biennium, and what our general fund budget will be for Forest Practices Administration. So all those things come together to set the rate, which is currently for Forest Practices Administration $1.38. And that is, there are line items, as Ms. Fast just mentioned, for OSU. There's also a line item in the statute for the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. Some of those are static and some of those change based on the way that the statute is currently structured. So maybe that's helpful. I mean, it's a combination of knowing roughly what the volume's gonna be so that when we do set a rate, it's matched to the general fund needs, because for the Forest Practice Administration, it's 60% general fund, 40% harvest tax. And the statute does not allow for exceeding the 40%. So we have to have a pretty firm identification of what the volume is so that we can make it through the biennium. And then one thing I'll note to Representative Reschke's question, if the volume goes way up or way down, for us, that rate is static. So the legislature basically just gives the authority for us to expend those funds. It's not necessarily the funding. So if harvest volume is way down, we wouldn't receive the revenue, if that makes sense. If it's way over what the forecast was, it goes into the ending balance, which is a part of the next biennium's rate. But the actual amount is static for us.
Representative Marsh. Hang on. Rep Marsh.
Darn.
There you go.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to explore a little bit that notion of the harvest going way up or way down. When I look on the materials that are posted on OLIS that are provided by Ms. McGovern, something that I'm really struck by and have been in the past is how very consistent our private timber harvests have been over the last 20 years. extremely little fluctuation. I mean, are there really moments you can point to in the last 20 years where we've seen a dramatic increase or decrease in harvest?
You know, I think that's a fair point. So Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, they do fluctuate over the biennium a little bit. So typically we see anywhere between 3 to 5% difference between the forecasted volume to what is actually the completed volume harvest. And for us, that makes a pretty significant difference. So a swing of $300,000, $500,000 at the end of a biennium does make a difference on how we run forest practice administration. So you're right, the, you know, it's usually around three to three and a half billion board feet per year. But if that drops to 3.1, it's still relatively stable, but it does have a pretty significant impact on our budgetary structure throughout the two-year cycle.
Thank you.
It strikes me that this is, I think I've mentioned before, it's a bit of an unusual situation. We don't adjust the personal or corporate income tax rates every 2 years. so it's unusual for Revenue Committee to see this kind of a structure. Any other questions for these folks? I guess I have one that I'd like to hear just like a 1 or 2 minute response, and then I have a statement and an observation to make. Is there anyone other than running some numbers at OSU and at Department of Forestry, are there others who you consult with as you are contemplating how to recommend the rate to submit to legislative fiscal office and for budgeting purposes?
Chair Nathanson, our economist does work with outside parties to estimate what the volume will be for the next biennium. So there is some of that work across and outside of the agency that occurs.
Thank you.
And on the OSU front, I would say we do, besides LFO staff, we do consult many times with the Ways and Means Committee members as well.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any other hands right now, any other questions. I guess I'm ready to make a couple of comments, and I'm not asking for response from our guests. Thank you very much for being with us. Not going to badger you with an additional question, but I do want the committee and anyone else listening to know that I've been giving a whole lot of thought to what we call the harvest tax, just in sort of general terms. We call it the harvest tax, but it's really comprised of five different rates, and they're adjusted every couple of years. I am looking into a notion where we would have a single rate and remove the sunset and provide some transparency in the process so that it's a legislatively determined process. And not only would it be transparent that we would set the rate, but then it would provide stability for budgeting and for the people who are paying the taxes. So I want to let you know that I'm really interested in looking at an option to set a single rate to adjust it for inflation and then distribute the revenue
roughly the way we do now. You know, it's easy to determine a certain percent is going to OSU School of Forestry. There's the research part, the education part. A certain percent is going to Department of Forestry for two different program areas. A certain percent is going to the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. It would be distributed the way we distribute it now, but to establish a single rate, make a more simple process, a more transparent process, and bring stability to departments, to OSU, and to the legislative process. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just want to chime in and say I'm very intrigued by your concept there. I think one of the responsibilities we have when we're managing these complex tax systems is to be as transparent and predictable for taxpayers as we possibly can when this rate is subject by multiple people making decisions to changes on an every 2 year basis. That's not transparent to me. So moving to a system that provides more stability, more predictability, makes a lot of sense to me. So I will look forward to that conversation.
It will require conversation in the future, won't it? And we're about out of time for today because we do have to vacate the room to make it available for another meeting. But Representative Valderrama, I saw that you had your hand up. You want to get in a comment here?
Sure. Yes. Thank you so much, Chair. I just wanted to reiterate my appreciation for your thoughtfulness and your leadership. I'm very also intrigued by that concept. And I think for me personally, I do very much appreciate additional transparency, but also engagement and making sure that the public has the opportunity to participate in that process. I just wanted to lift up that I'm very much looking forward to that conversation.
Thank you. Representative Marsh. Another comment? Okay. Any other committee members' comments before we close this informational meeting about forest products harvest tax? Okay, I'm closing that informational meeting, and thank you to the people who joined us to let us know your piece of how the numbers are developed. Mr. Alanak, anything else for today's meeting before we adjourn?
Just one scheduling item, Madam Chair, just to make sure all of the members are aware that given the new schedule that will take effect on Tuesday, actually, because Monday, neither chamber's meeting. The next House Revenue meeting will be Wednesday at 5:30 p.m.
Okay. So we're all on notice, including Rep. Smith, that we may be bringing our sandwiches with us to the next meeting. Thank you. And committee, we've been so used to meeting at our either 1 o'clock or sometimes adjusted to 1:30 or 3:15 time slots. It looks like that's changing for the remainder of the session to accommodate all these other meetings that are being squeezed in for the Senate and the House. Representative Valderrama.
Yes, I'm sorry, Chair Nathanson. Just a quick clarification. So I just wanted to confirm that that means that we'll be meeting during House floor, for that Wednesday meeting?
I believe floor adjourns at 5, and we would start at 5:30. Is that...
I believe that's correct, Madam Chair. That's my... Generally speaking, the committees are pushed to the evening to accommodate floor sessions.
I see. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for helping us get our business done today. We're adjourned.